Welcome to the Healthy Happy Life Podcast with Dr. Frida, delivering your weekly dose of real medical news and healthy living tips and trends. This podcast is for anyone who wants to prioritize their health and stay up to date with the latest medical information to help you live your healthiest, happiest life. And now for your weekly dose of medical news, health talk, and a whole lot of fun, here's your host, Dr. Frida.
I'm Dr. Frida, and we are live here for Medical Monday, Medicine in the News. Welcome, because we're going to give you all of the hot health topics in the headlines. Today, we are talking about RFK Jr. Oh my goodness, yes. We're talking about him because of some health issues. He is an independent presidential candidate who has declared himself to be very healthy and robust, but now we find out, by his own words, that a worm got into his brain, ate a portion of it, and died. Yeah, that sounds fantastical, but there actually is a very real diagnosis which this is consistent with, and it's called neurocysticercosis. So we'll talk about brain worms, okay, how you get them, and how to prevent them, and how to treat them. Yeah, it's a real thing. And have you had any sodas lately? A pop, if you're from the Midwest, I don't know. Have you had any chips? Have you had any processed meats? Have you had any ultra processed foods? Well, please listen loud and clear, because a 30-year study has found that ultra processed foods can lead to early death. Yes, in fact, the study showed that they lead to 4% more death than all causes of death. So it's a real thing. So we'll talk about ultra processed foods and how you can keep yourself really, really healthy. And guess what? May is High Blood Pressure Education Month. Yes, High Blood Pressure Education, which is right up my sleeve, because I'm Dr. Frida and I am a board certified kidney and high blood pressure specialist. So I will be answering all of your questions about high blood pressure live and on stage. We'll talk about how to lower blood pressure naturally. We'll talk about when medicines are appropriate. We'll talk about foods that help with blood pressure. Yes, how to use food as medicine. We'll talk about lifestyle. We'll talk about all of that. But listen, here's what's really important. I'm here live and I'm answering your questions live. So yes, go ahead right now, formulate your questions in your brain about these topics and I will answer your questions for a live Q&A. Well, welcome. Let's go ahead and get started. I'm Dr. Frida. It's time for Medicine in the News. Joining me is my wonderful co-host and practice manager, Shador. Come on down, Shador. Let's get started with these topics. How are you doing, Shador?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How was your Mother's Day?
Very relaxing. How was yours?
It was very good. I was quite happy. We had some good weather, got a chance to spend time with some family. My kids gave me some very thoughtful gifts. They know me very well. And they're actually, turning into very thoughtful young people. So I'm pretty happy. There's some people who aren't very happy, some folks who have been having some health problems in the headlines, but we'll tackle that by and by. But first, let's get started with some of the questions that have already been asked. And we actually had a super chat I want to make sure that I acknowledge, because I definitely appreciate that super chat. So let's go ahead and get started with that.
Absolutely. So the super chat came from Superfood Parents.
Thank you, Superfood Parents.
I think we were talking about people were kind of here popping in early here weekly and been subscribed to you for quite some time. So Superfood Parent says, yes, a lot of us have been lurking, learning, and enjoying for a long time. At least I have. Thank you for your work and resources.
Thank you so much, Superfood Parent. Thank you for that super chat. I really appreciate that support for the channel doing the super chat. And I most definitely appreciate you for watching and for appreciating our content. And your name is quite apropos, Superfood Parent, as you will see later on in the talk today, because in talking about ultra processed foods, what we really want to lean on is people eating nutrient dense foods and superfoods. And you said Superfood Parent. Well, the word parent is key, because while in the United States, ultra processed foods make up 50% of adult diets, ultra-processed foods actually make up 67% of children's diets. So we need more parents to be superfood parents. Thank you so much for that. Ultra-processed foods, Shador, yes, that 30-year story study. Yeah, a 30-year study from 1986 to 2018. 30 years, over 100,000 people studied. And the news is back on ultra-processed foods, and it's not good. Let's play the clip.
All right.
Foods. Ultra processed foods, one of my favorites, may be addictive as smoking.
Ultra-processed foods contain additives like flavor enhancers, colors, thickeners, gels, basically ingredients you wouldn't usually buy to cook with. And recent studies have linked ultra-processed foods to heart disease, anxiety, depression, even cancer. And that's all obviously really scary stuff. In fact, research finds ultra-processed foods make up more than half of the typical American diet. I'm a health reporter and have been for 15 years. And even I feel overwhelmed by some of the things I read about the stuff we're eating. I really wanted to make sense of it all, and I knew I wasn't alone. So,
yep, that's really, it's kind of scary knowing that ultra-processed food makes up 50% of the American diet. So here's the question I want to ask. Yeah, put a one in the chat if you knew that ultra-processed foods accounted for 50% of the American diet. Put a one if you knew, put a two if that number surprises you, if it seems kind of high. A one if you knew about the ultra-processed foods being 50% of the American diet, a two if you're surprised by that. And I'm going to tell you, if this weren't something that I studied and if I weren't already kind of following the studies, it would surprise me, because it just seems like if ultra-processed foods are so bad, why do we have them so much in the American diet? I'll tell you why we have them so much in the American diet. So we know that ultra-processed foods have a lot of additives, right? They have flavor enhancers. They have texture enhancers. They have color enhancers. When you pick up a bag of bright orange Cheetos, you know that bright orange color is not natural, but it's almost neon. It's so inviting. And then you have the salt, you have sugar, you have fat, all the things that really enhance the taste. The other thing is, an ultra-processed food, so you'll have a lot of preservatives. And of course, that will help them to last longer on the shelves, right? And the longer the shelf life, the more money that the manufacturers can make. So we have a lot of ultra-processed foods in that regard. But here's what happened in this study. Oh my goodness. It's a 30-year study, right, from 1986 all the way to 2018, where it's an observational study. And they looked at over 100,000 people, and they found that the people who had diets that were ultra-processed, really high in ultra-processed foods, actually had earlier deaths. And the ultra-processed foods-associated diets led to 4% higher deaths than all other causes of death, okay? So there was a direct link in the study. They also found that ultra-processed foods were associated with diabetes mellitus type 2, associated with high blood pressure, associated with being a person living with obesity, associated with cancer, associated with anxiety, associated with depression. And so there just seems to be a whole lot of cons when it comes to ultra-processed foods. The other thing they found with the ultra-processed foods is that they were associated with weight gain. There was one study where they compared people who were on the ultra-processed food diet to people who were on a more natural diet without the processed foods. The ones who were in the ultra-processed foods gained an average of 2 pounds per 2 weeks of that study, okay? And when they were on a diet that did not have the ultra-processed foods, they lost weight. Also, people with the ultra-processed foods had higher inflammatory markers in the blood. So now it's like, okay, everybody put away the ultra-processed foods. Duh, right? Not duh. So let's talk about these foods. It seems like, duh, if the foods are going to kill us more and lead to early death, let's not do ultra-processed foods. Well, it's really not as simple as that. It's not a no-brainer, as our twos probably already know. This is what they found out in the study. When they gave people the diets that were clean, that did not have the ultra-processed foods, those diets have a cost that is 40% higher than the diets that have ultra-processed foods, okay? The cost is 40% higher to eat diets that don't have ultra-processed foods. And that's not even including the time, okay? It takes time to prepare food that's not ultra-processed. So what does that mean? It largely comes down to economics. It's not just about education. Oh, we got to educate people about the ultra-processed foods. Yes, of course. Y'all know I'm all for education, but we also have to put our money where our mouths are. If we want people to have healthier diets, we have to make sure that they have the money, that they have the income to be able to afford eating clean after we talk to them, so they can afford to run to Whole Foods and shop for their whole family of five, or to go to Sprouts, or to go to the Garden and not always run to the fast food corner where they have the ultra processed foods. So it's one of those things. And it's also, you know, contributes to the health equity gap. A lot of people just can't afford them. That being said, the more you know, the more you can do. So understanding that it's important to try to avoid processed meats, to try to avoid artificially flavored sodas, to try to avoid chips, to try to avoid, you know, a lot of these prepackaged foods. If you're able to avoid those, then you will decrease a lot of the illnesses that are associated, including the diabetes, the obesity. But yeah, that's a 30-year study, which is a really big deal. So now we have the problem. So hopefully we can come up with a solution, not just with education, but also with some economic support.
You're listening to the Healthy Happy Life Podcast with Dr. Frieda. Be sure to download a copy of Dr. Frieda's latest book, Under Pressure, Your Step-by-Step Guide to Controlling High Blood Pressure. You'll find this and more at healthyhappylifepodcast.com.
All right. Who was that who said they want to know about the worm? That was our first person in the chat, in the live chat.
Well, Richard, he commented about the worm.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Richard.
Salmon.
Richard, we're about to talk about the worm. We're about to talk about the worm because, again, the independent presidential candidate, RFK Jr., said that a worm crawled into his brain, ate a portion of it, and died. And, you know, you hear that RFK, you hear that Kennedy name. But one thing that's important to know with RFK, you know, his family has denounced his politics. Okay. So when you hear of him, you really can't associate him with the JFK politics or with his father, RFK, because the Kennedys who are alive as a family have come out, and from what I've seen, just about all, if not all, have denounced his politics. RFK Jr. is an environmental activist. He also has some very anti-scientific notions. And I'll say this because he said it. He's recorded saying it. He stands proudly on it. He is very much anti-vax. He was even in an interview saying that if he sees a parent with a child, he'll go up to them and say, don't give them any vaccinations. He'll say that to strangers. And he's been very vocal about that. And many of the things that he quotes, his reasoning for being against vaccinations are not founded in science at all. And I have a problem when you're not founding your information, when you're not backing it up with data, when it's not evidence-based. I also have a problem when you look at vaccinations. I know we had a big issue, you know, when everyone had the lockdown, we had those vaccines, which are relatively new, right? The COVID vaccines, but he denounces vaccines across the board, it looks like, in some of his interviews. One thing that's very important to understand is that before we had vaccinations, we had people dying from measles. We had people dying from smallpox, right? We had people dying from polio or being paralyzed by polio. And the numbers are really unconscionable. Once we developed these vaccines, we literally saved lives. A lot of the people who are talking about vaccines have no idea what it's like to live in an era when you look around and your classmates are paralyzed or even dead from polio. And have you seen smallpox? No, you haven't, because it's been eradicated. Smallpox was something that would cause almost certain death in children. And so make sure you look at my YouTube video right here on this channel, Dr. Frieda, on the truth about vaccines to get some evidence on the history of vaccines. Make sure you keep it all, let's keep it real scientific here. Let's keep it scientific. All right, as y'all come in, make sure you like this video. Like this video, it lets YouTube know that we're here, we're sharing evidence-based information, and be sure to hit that notification button. I'm very proud to say that we're up to over 700,000 subscribers on this channel. So yes, please subscribe, hit the notification button so you'll be among the first to know when we release new content. All right. Do we have any questions right now related to RFK? Because I'm going to talk about what happened with that brain worm.
Mashon, what's the best dewormer peel?
Okay. So let's talk about it, because the best thing to do is to prevent it. So here's what happens with the brain worm. So what he has described really is not too much of an exaggeration, but what he's described sounds like neurocysticercosis. Okay. And what happens is it mostly comes from undercooked pork. Okay. And if you have a pork worm, a tapeworm in the pork, a tapeworm. So what happens if someone eats the undercooked pork, this tapeworm that they ingest will lay eggs. Okay. And what happens is those eggs will be passed in their stool. Well, if that person uses the restroom and does not wash their hands and they go and prepare a turkey sandwich for you, then now you will eat the eggs. If you eat those eggs, okay, the tapeworm eggs, the parasite eggs, you swallow those eggs in your intestine, those eggs will hatch, okay, and they'll have the little immature form of the tapeworm. the larvae, the little immature, each little larva or the larvae will then migrate. If they migrate to the brain, they become covered in a fluid-filled bubble or a cyst. And this is the neurocysticercosis. Those cysts can stay there. They can be dominant for years, 5 years, 10 years. But if something happens, if the cysts are disrupted, if there's death, then what happens is your body's immune system can attack and you can really get a lot of symptoms. The symptoms may include memory loss, confusion, blindness, blurred vision, psychosis, and even death. So this is the neurocysticercosis. And what you'll catch when I talked about, y'all, that's my dog, Shadow. She just turned 3 on May 11th. Happy birthday, Shadow. I wish you would hush. All right. Sorry. So what happens is, you know, in that whole cycle that I described, I want someone in the chat, tell me one thing, tell me a couple of things that you think could prevent you from even getting neurocysticercosis. Two things that can prevent it. So as far as the treatment, so when we talk about the deworming pill, a lot of times, because neurocysticercosis is actually, the symptoms are oftentimes caused by inflammation in the brain from the immune system attacking the brain, then in that case, anti-inflammatories or steroids are often the treatment, okay? And even anti-seizure medications can be the treatment. There are anti-parasite medications for actually treating the tapeworm, and sometimes even surgery is one of the treatments. So as far as the best prevention, has anyone given a shot at what the best prevention might be?
Yeah, we have a couple of mentions.
All right, let me hear. Come on to the front of the class.
All right. So we have my cursor here. Melissa Volsey, she says proper hand washing.
Proper hand washing. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's actually going to be the best. And I want y'all to sit on that one for a while. Proper hand washing. Because as I mentioned, for that person who ate the pork, ingested the tapeworm laid the eggs, the person passed it in their stool. Had they washed their hands, that would be the end of that. So proper hand washing really is going to be the number one. Before we get to the other ones, let's just play a clip of RFK and what they had to say about him.
All right.
There was an eye-opening headline tonight involving presidential candidate Robert Kennedy Jr. The New York Times reporting on a 2012 deposition during which RFK Jr. said doctors once found a parasite, a dead worm, in his brain. Tonight, what his campaign is now saying about this. And here's Kana Whitworth.
Tonight, new questions about the health of independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. after he claimed a doctor discovered a dead worm in his brain. According to the New York Times, Kennedy testified in a 2012 deposition that he experienced memory loss at the time. I have cognitive problems, clearly. Kennedy said one of the doctors said it could have been caused by a worm that got into my brain and ate a portion of it and then died.
Most people will have at least some degree of cognitive impairment just because of the inflammation that goes on in the brain when a parasite has made a home for itself there. But there's really varying degrees to how severe that might be.
Kennedy testified he also suffered from mercury poisoning around the same time. Doctors interviewed by ABC News say both conditions could cause a wide range of health problems. But for most people, the impacts are often short-lived. The 70-year-old has touted himself as a physically fit alternative to President Biden, 81, and former President Trump, 77, the oldest candidates to ever run for the White House, even posting videos of himself doing push-ups and skiing with an Olympic gold medalist.
I go hike, and I hike uphill, a mile and a half up and a mile and a half down with my dogs, and I do my meditations. And then I go to the gym, and I go to the gym for 35 minutes.
And David, Kennedy's campaign tells us he did have a parasite, but that the issue was resolved more than 10 years ago, and that questioning his health is a hilarious suggestion given his competition.
Okay. So, yeah. So the good hand washing, that was excellent. You moved to the front of the class. Let me tell you about RFK Jr., because as they mentioned, he touted himself as, you know, he's against, you know, Biden and the former president. And of course, we know that they are both advanced in age, and he's supposed to be the young 70-year-old who's super healthy. That's been his whole thing with the push-ups and all of that. But now this brain worm thing, I'm going to tell you about how that got him. The brain worm, likely neurocysticercosis, plus the mercury poisoning, plus atrial fibrillation. He's had that too. If y'all have questions about atrial fibrillation and mercury poisoning, please put those in the chat as well. it was in a divorce deposition. He's trying to show how he didn't have any money earning potential, not as much, because he said that he had brain fog and memory loss. That was his whole big thing out of his mouth in 2012 in order, you know, to not have to pay as much, presumably, to his divorcing his second wife. He said he didn't have as much earning potential, but now it came back and bit him, because now he's saying, oh, no, no, I don't have any memory loss. I don't have any cognition problems. So it's just interesting how you got to be careful how you play these games. If he was legit and having memory loss and cognition problems, and that's why he couldn't pay his, you know, second wife after the divorce, then that's just what it is. But now it looks like he's doing a 160, because that doesn't sound very good when you're trying to show that you have the best memory and cognition compared to the older opponents. It's just very interesting.
You're listening to the Healthy Happy Life Podcast with Dr. Frieda. Be sure to connect with Dr. Frieda on YouTube and Instagram for more health and medical information and to see what she's up to in her everyday life.
All right. Who else said they knew some, they thought they knew some ways to prevent it? Did anyone else agree with the good hand washing?
Yeah, a lot agree with the good hand washing. We also had quite a few say no pork.
Okay, let me see. Let me see some names. Let's shout out some names here.
Man. So Nora.
Hi, Nora. Okay, no pork. All right. Now we'll say specifically it's an undercooked pork where the tapeworms are found. But if you do no pork, yeah, that's a good way to get your odds together and avoiding the tapeworm. And it's also in certain places. It's not really so much in the United States. That's not heavy. It's for people who've traveled a lot, you know, so people who traveled to places like certain Latin American countries, certain Asian countries, sub-Saharan Africa. And in fact, neurocysticercosis is the leading cause of adult onset seizure disorder worldwide. Okay. It accounts for 30% of the adult onset seizures. Not so much. It's not very, very common here in the United States, but it's a real thing. But yeah, dodging undercooked pork can certainly help you to avoid some of these tapeworms. Okay. But yeah, the good hand washing will keep you from eating the eggs that are in someone's excrement. All right. And put a 3 in the chat if you had already heard about this story, the brain worms. I think it hit a lot of people. Put a 3 in the chat if you already had heard about this story. And then we will move on and we'll hit another question that we had that wanted to get to. And then we'll talk about High Blood Pressure Education Month. But any 3s, had anyone already heard about this brain worm story? I know we had at least one person who had already heard about it.
Yeah, we have Ms. Roslyn.
Hi, Ms. Roslyn.
Carol.
Hi, Carol.
Valerie.
Hi, Valerie. So y'all have been on the news, reading the news, watching the news. Yeah, it seemed pretty unbelievable. It seemed pretty unbelievable at first. And let me have y'all run one more thing. Put a 4 in the chat if when you first heard him say that he had a worm that crawled in his brain, ate and died, that you thought that didn't sound like it was true. Because it sounds like it's true now. But if at first you're like, that sounds like a mess. That sounds like cap.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Because it sounded like this man has, what is he talking about? But it's a very real thing, as you now know.
Michonne thought it was like, oh, no way.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And Ms. Pat.
Hi, Ms. Pat. Hello. But I remember studying that in medical school at Meharry Medical College, my HBCU medical school. I remember studying neurocysticercosis and microbiology. So when he described it, I was like, oh, that sounds like neurocysticercosis. But I think I was probably one of the few who popped up kind of like, oh, that's a real thing. It sounded ridiculous. All right. So we'll move on. And I want to, let's see, we will talk about hypertension, but there was another question, Shador. I want to bring up a question that we had. I'll talk about that and then we'll move on into hypertension. And again, if y'all have any questions, more questions about brain worms, about the AFib, okay, the atrial fibrillation that he has, RFK Jr., about mercury poisoning. We'll touch on that a little bit. And then definitely it's High Blood Pressure Education Awareness Month. So please go ahead and put your questions in about that as well. What's this other question we had that I wanted to touch on?
Was the one pertaining to dialysis?
Yes. Okay.
All right. Yeah. This is from a lot of zeros, 1411.
All right. Hello. Thank you for your question.
My blood pressure keeps dropping after dialysis. Why is that?
All right. That is a lot of zeros, 411. Okay. Blood pressure. Oh, so this is a blood pressure related question. Why does your blood pressure keep dropping after dialysis? Okay, so first off, we know that high blood pressure is one of the leading causes for people going on dialysis. Diabetes is number one. High blood pressure is number two in this country. So a lot of people have a history of hypertension, but once you're on dialysis, oftentimes during dialysis, the blood pressure will drop. Well, there's a few things that are going on. One, when you have dialysis, and so what dialysis is it is a kidney replacement therapy, right? So you go on dialysis if both of your kidneys stop functioning, okay? If both of your kidneys stop functioning, then you're unable to live unless you have some form of kidney replacement therapy or renal replacement therapy like dialysis. So it could be the hemodialysis or the blood dialysis in the dialysis center, or it can be a home dialysis like a PD, peritoneal dialysis. Be sure to go to my videos on hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis right here on this Dr. Frieda YouTube channel. I go into detail. I go into a lot of detail. Okay. But anyway, so when you're in dialysis, one of the things that we're doing is we're trying to replace the function of your native kidneys, right? And your native kidneys, one of the things that they do is they get rid of excess fluid in the form of urine. If the kidneys fail, they often don't do that very efficiently. So in dialysis, we're pulling fluid from your blood. Right? Usually there's an AV fistula, okay, some type of an access that's put in. There's two tubes that are connected. One tube takes your blood from you, runs it through our dialysis filter, which acts as your substitute kidney, and it cleans excess toxins out of the blood, helps to balance electrolytes, and it also will pull out excess fluid. And then it would return in the other tube your same blood back to you, now with less fluid and more balanced electrolytes. Well, you can imagine that as we pull that fluid, and we're usually doing it within 3.5, 4.5 hours, that's a lot of shifts in your body. And sometimes what happens is that we might pull the fluid a little bit too fast, right? Or we might pull a little bit too much fluid. If we pull too much fluid, then that can cause a drop in your blood pressure. And that's usually the cause. Now, again, this is information. You want to make sure you talk to your kidney doctor, okay, and talk to your healthcare providers in the dialysis unit to find out what's going on with you. The other thing is that sometimes, and this is not as common, but something to make sure you ask about, sometimes people can actually have some reactions, right? Have some type of allergic reaction either to what's in the dialysis filter or with some of the medicines that you're being given. You want to talk to your doctor about the medicines you're being given and about the filter to make sure you're not having some type of a reaction, an allergic reaction that's causing your blood vessels to dilate and for your blood pressure to drop. The other thing is that sometimes people can be pretty cold in the dialysis unit. And so they'll bring one blanket, two blankets, three blankets to make sure they're warm. Well, when you're very warm, that causes your blood vessels to dilate and it can cause the blood pressure to drop. And so in some cases like that, we might want to have that dialysis fluid to be a little colder to tighten your blood vessels. So there are many reasons, but the most common one is if we're pulling fluid too fast, I'm pulling too much fluid within a short amount of time, or if you're pulling too much fluid from you. And you also want to make sure it's not a heart issue, because sometimes patients who have heart issues, which, you know, heart disease is the number one cause of death, not just in general, but also specifically in dialysis patients, make sure you're not having some type of a heart arrhythmia, congestive heart failure as the cause of your blood pressure dropping. But consult with your doctor. These are just a few reasons. And thank you, multiple zeros, 411. All right.
Thank you.
Very good. Very good. All right. Any other reactions before we get into to Hypertension Education Awareness Month?
Yes, ma'am. There are. Yeah. Melissa, she says, I never want to eat again. When you're describing the worm and how it's the whole process, I'm thinking the same thing. And you use turkey sandwich as an example. Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm sorry, y'all. I'm just trying to paint a little picture for you. But just keeping it real, because I know some people have kind of, you know, we say, okay, it's undercooked pork and all of that. But no, very specifically with those eggs, is the undercooked pork that's eaten by one person, but it's the eggs that they've passed out, not washed your hands, and then they've made you your pancakes, passed them to you, and so you eat the eggs. Oh, there I go again. Sorry, but it's not great to eat processed meat anyway. If it's processed turkey, that's not great. And pancakes are one of the ultra processed foods as well, unless they're made in a natural fashion. All right, Shador, let's talk about High Blood Pressure Education Awareness Month. Let's roll that beautiful bean footage.
High blood pressure disproportionately affects African-Americans more than any other racial group. According to the CDC, 54% of Blacks are affected by high blood pressure compared to 46% of whites and 36% of Hispanics. Having high blood pressure increases the risk of kidney disease, stroke, and heart disease. Here to tell us how we can lower our blood pressure naturally is Dr. Frieda Fischer, nephrologist, internist, and author of Under Pressure, A Guide to Controlling High Blood Pressure. She joins us from Georgia. How are you doing there, Doc?
I am great. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing great. Now, this is such an important topic because, as we just laid out here in the statistics, this issue of high blood pressure, honestly, is deadly, and it disproportionately impacts Black people. What can we do to take control of it in a natural way?
The first thing we can do is understand our risks. If you have family members who have high blood pressure, if you are a person who is living with obesity, that puts you at risk. If you lead a sedentary lifestyle, if you're busy and you just don't put exercise as a priority, that puts you at risk for high blood pressure. So there are all kinds of things that put us at risk. But the trick with high blood pressure is that a lot of times we have no symptoms. And so I get patients in my office all the time who say, oh, no, you know, I feel fine. I don't have a headache. I exercise. I do well. I think I'm fine. But high blood pressure is a silent killer. So you can be walking around here looking healthy, feeling good, but the high blood pressure can be damaging your kidneys, damaging your heart, causing strokes, and ending you up in my dialysis unit on dialysis when it really doesn't have to get to that point.
Wow.
All right. So Yes. So that was exciting. That was back when I got a chance to be on the Roland Martin show, Roland Martin Unfiltered, talking about high blood pressure. But here we are. It is High Blood Pressure Disease Awareness Month. So here is my question that I want to ask the good people. And then I'll go ahead and start taking questions. But I want to ask, what are some of the symptoms of high blood pressure? And so that's one question I want to ask. If y'all put that in the chat, we'll go for it. We'll answer those questions. But are there any other questions that we have now that are related to any of our topics? RFK Jr., the brain worms, atrial fibrillation, mercury poisoning. And then, of course, all high blood pressures. Come on. High blood pressure questions. Come on up.
So Margaret, hi.
Darted. Hi, Margaret.
She says AFib. Need to know more info about it.
Oh, okay. So yeah, so AFib or atrial fibrillation. Now that's something that's been in the headlines. Yes, it's in the headlines because RFK Jr. has it, but a whole lot of other people have it as well. And it is an abnormal heart rhythm. We actually have one of the senators, Senator Fetterman. You'll recall that he's our senator, but when he was running during his campaign, he was running against Dr. Oz. And he had, and Senator Fetterman had to go and be in the hospital. He was kind of off the grid for a while. And we found out that was because he had a stroke. And then we later found out that his stroke was related to AFib or atrial fibrillation. So what happens in AFib is that the heart develops an abnormal rhythm. It's an irregular rhythm. And so normally you should have sound one, sound two in the heart, S1, S2, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And in most adults, that sound will beat 60 to 100 beats per minute. But in atrial fibrillation, it'll sound more like boom, 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 just erratic, okay? Irregularly irregular. And it's often because instead of your heart just following the normal signals where there's a certain node that sends an electrical firing and you have the atria, the top two chambers of the heart that are nicely coordinated with the ventricles, the bottom two chambers of the heart, and it works just so musically and wonderfully, everything's out of sync with AFib. And so your heart just kind of moves around like a bag of worms. Here's the problem. When the heart is moving around all asynchronous, irregularly beating, then the blood can slosh around inside of the chambers. And when that blood sloshes around, you can get a clot in the heart, a blood clot in the heart. And especially if you're born with one of these congenital defects, if there's some type of a hole in your heart, you probably heard of that, people being born with a hole in the heart. But, you know, it's compatible with life. You can live with it, especially if it's a small hole in the heart. But sometimes what can happen is that blood clot can be released from the heart and it can go to the brain, causing a stroke. OK, so atrial fibrillation is a big deal. So here's what you do about it. Number one, if you find yourself having palpitations or if you are getting out of breath. And I believe Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the basketball great, shared that he has a history of atrial fibrillation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have had atrial fibrillation. It's not uncommon. But one of the things to do first, recognize the symptoms. If you get heart palpitations, if you're getting tired all the time, if you're getting easily fatigued, activities that you used to be able to do, now you can't. Atrial fibrillation is one of the possibilities. There are other possibilities too, of course, congestive heart failure, anemia, or maybe just being deconditioned. But the key is, don't sit at home trying to figure out on your own. Go see your doctor. But these are some things that could be atrial fibrillation. When you go to the doctor, they'll examine you and see if your heart rate is irregular. They can also do an EKG, okay, one of the heart tracings to see if you have it. Okay, so the first thing is to identify it. The treatments, and remember, this is information you want to consult with your physician, your PCP, and your cardiologist for sure if you do have AFib. But one of the treatments is blood thinners, right? Because you don't want to get heart clots from the blood sloshing around. So very oftentimes, the doctor will give you a blood thinner. If you have AFib that is really kind of more serious, like if you have very, very fast heart rate, like if it's getting up in the 130s, 150s, 180s, if you're having symptoms, then they may actually have to do an electrical cardioversion. Like they might have to shock your heart into a normal rhythm, okay, or cardiovert you. And then ultimately, if they're able to find the source of the abnormal rhythm, like if they're able to find what's firing out these extra electrical discharges, then your interventional cardiologist can actually do an ablation, meaning they actually find the area that's causing the AFib and they knock it out to give you a regular rhythm. But that's just a little something on atrial fibrillation. Really, the key is making sure that you follow up with your primary care physician and that you pay attention to your body. And when you have symptoms that are out of whack, don't ignore them. Don't say, oh, I'm just tired, or I'm just stressed. No, go to your healthcare professional and find out what it is. But yes, RFK Jr. has AFib and he has shared that he has a history of it. Thank you, Margaret, for that question.
You're listening to the Healthy Happy Life Podcast with Dr. Frieda. Be sure to download a copy of Dr. Frieda's latest book, Under Pressure, Your Step-by-Step Guide to Controlling High Blood Pressure. You'll find this and more at healthyhappylifepodcast.com.
Yes. All right. Any other questions?
You asked about symptoms for my headache. I mean, for high blood pressure. How do you know?
Oh, okay. So that's one of the symptoms. Yes. So yes, you can get a headache. Now, migraines, so certainly, you know, if you're a person who already has migraines, because even if you don't have blood pressure, you can have migraine headaches, okay? If you have high blood pressure and you already have a history of migraines, it can make it worse. But headaches in general, yes, if you have high blood pressure, it can certainly cause pressure on the vessels, the tiny vessels in your brain, and it can lead to a headache. And something else it can do, if that blood pressure is persistently high, it can lead to bleeds in those vessels, because you can imagine pressure against those brain blood vessels, it can cause them to burst and you can have a hemorrhagic stroke even, okay? Mm-hmm. You have a hemorrhagic stroke. Anyone else mention a symptom of high blood pressure? Thank you. That's a good one.
Yes. Shelby says heart palpitations.
Heart palpitations. Yes. When you have high blood pressure, it can cause a whole lot of situations. The higher the blood pressure, the more it can stress the heart out, right? And trying to pump against this high blood pressure. And this can lead to issues with your heart structure. It can lead to LVH or left ventricular hypertrophy. Some of you who have high blood pressure may have been told that you have LVH. And you don't have to share all your business, but if you care to share, if you've heard of LVH or if a loved one or you has been told you have LVH, which is a big side of your left heart, the ventricle is big, put a 5 in the chart. If you've heard of LVH or for a loved one, or you have even had LVH, it could be a loved one. But yes, but once you're straining this heart, you can get hypertensive heart disease and heart palpitations could ultimately be one of the situations, one of the complications. Thank you, Shelby. What else we got?
Michonne, blurry vision.
Absolutely. You can get blurry vision. So one of the things that can happen with high blood pressure, just like they can affect the vessels in the brain, Michonne, they can also affect the vessels in your eyes. Okay. You can get the retina, those blood vessels in the back of the eye, right? The blood vessels in your retina can be affected and you can get a hypertensive retinopathy, which can lead to blurry vision. So yeah, that's an excellent one of the symptoms that you can get. Anyone else?
Yes, ma'am. Miss Valerie says edema.
Yes, you can get edema. And the edema is interesting because there's a whole lot of things. If you have high blood pressure, then one of the things that can lead to high blood pressure is excessive salt in the diet, right? And according to the American Heart Association, most adults should have less than 1,500 milligrams of sodium in the diet per day. Well, if you're having a lot of salt, what does salt do? Water follows salt, right? And so you'll retain water. You can retain water and it can lead to edema. And it often starts off like in the feet, in the ankles. But if you have edema that you're noticing, yes, make sure you get your blood pressure. Make sure you get your blood pressure checked because you want to make sure that you don't have hypertension. Okay. And just a few other points. I'll take this one and then a few other points. I just want to make sure I give people the definitions of high blood pressure for high blood pressure education awareness. Let's see. But what was this one, the symptom here?
This one, gracefully blessed, shortness of breath.
Absolutely gracefully blessed. You can get shortness of breath when you have hypertension, for sure. And there's all kinds of reasons. If you are having an issue with the heart, so we talked about heart palpitations, we talked about congestive heart failure, left ventricular hypertrophy. If you're having a difficult in the way that your heart pumps because of the high blood pressure, then that's going to affect how well you deliver oxygen to your tissues, right? And if this happens, you can certainly get shortness of breath. And there are other symptoms as well, which we'll hit on. But let's talk about the definition of high blood pressure, because the definition actually changed not that long ago, but in 2017 with the American College of Cardiology and other organizations where we changed the definition. There was a time when 130 over 80 was considered okay as far as high blood pressure. But now, if your top number, that systolic, is 130 or higher, and if your diastolic, that bottom number, is 80 or higher, it's considered to be high blood pressure. Okay. So if that systolic is between 130 and 139, and the diastolic is between 80 and 89, that's stage one hypertension. Okay. And then if that systolic is 140 or greater, that's stage two hypertension. Or if that diastolic is 90 or greater, stage two hypertension. And even if that top number is between 120 and 129, that's not hypertension, but it's considered elevated, almost like a pre-hypertension, something to watch. And so the optimal blood pressure is less than 120 over less than 80. Consult with your physician, because depending on what other health conditions you have, your physician may have a different goal for you. But in general, those are the definitions of high blood pressure. So if you're listening and you're like, oh, my blood pressure is fine, it's a 130s over 80s, that's hypertension. Okay. So consult with your physician, find out what blood pressure is good for you, because the reason the definition was changed is because we found that elevated blood pressures can lead to heart disease, strokes, and it's the number one cause of kidney failure. The number two cause of kidney failure, the number two reason why I see patients in the dialysis unit. And as people are telling me the symptoms of high blood pressure, I also want some folks to tell me about some of the causes of high blood pressure. I want you to throw those out there. You know, sometimes you have just primary hypertension, or what we have called essential hypertension, meaning even if you exercise, you're at a healthy weight, you do all the things, sometimes it's just in your genetics and we don't have a clear reason on why you have high blood pressure. But there are cases where there are other diseases that can lead to high blood pressure, okay? And if you correct the underlying disease, then oftentimes you can correct the blood pressure. So if anyone knows of some causes of high blood pressure, like some secondary causes, I want them to go ahead and put that in the chat. Meanwhile, let's just kind of go through and let's keep seeing what questions we have with this live Q&A. What else do we have? Or, you know, or as you go, you could just pick out some more of the symptoms if they haven't mentioned all of them.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we got several. So,
let's see. But if we have any questions, yeah, make sure y'all keep asking the questions on the brain worm. I don't know. Did I finish answering? I think I answered most of the questions on the brain worm.
I think you asked most of them. Michelle did ask a question about the worm. As soon as I find it, I'll show it. But she wants to know, how do you test for a disease? X-rays, question mark.
Okay. Oh, that's a good question. So as far as specifically about the neurocysticercosis, So brain imaging. Okay. So MRIs, CAT scans, scans of the brain, because what they will show is they'll light up that cyst. So that fluid filled bubble that's around the larva. And if you go to my Instagram, if you put up my Instagram here, my Instagram at dr.frida, I actually posted a video this week where I described neurocysticercosis. And in that video, you'll see in some of the background pictures I have, the two different slides I have of what the brain looks like when it has those cysts from the larvae. So these are the eggs, the tapeworm eggs that have hatched and that have traveled to the brain. And if you go to that Instagram video after you finish this live, check it out and you'll see it. You'll also, ooh, also have images of the actual tapeworm. I have images of a few different images of the tapeworm, what it looks like when it's first ingested from the undercooked pork. But yeah, they can tell by the brain MRIs. And if you test stool, like if they test the stool for ova and parasites, then that's a way to see if you have tapeworm eggs in the stool. Yeah, but again, it's not something that's very common here in the United States. About 1,000 to 2,000 cases per year of neurocysticercosis. But again, worldwide, it's the number one cause of seizure disorder, and it causes 30% of the adult onset epilepsy worldwide. Yeah.
All right. Tyrone wants to know. Hi, Tyrone.
You better call Tyrone. Okay. Hi, Tyrone.
Does kidney disease cause high blood pressure?
Oh, Tyrone. Now, I already told you that high blood pressure causes kidney disease, but guess what? Yes, kidney disease can cause high blood pressure. What came first, the chicken or the egg? Sometimes once you have chronic kidney disease, then you can actually fire off excess amounts of certain substances that can cause tightening of the blood vessels. You can get high renin, you can get high angiotensin. And so, yes, patients who have kidney disease, sometimes that kidney disease can lead to high blood pressure. So the best thing to do is make sure that you have your blood pressure monitored regularly. If you have high blood pressure, you certainly want to make sure that your doctor is checking your kidney labs, such as your BUN, your creatinine, your EGFR. You want your doctor to check your urine, and they can do a urine dipstick. The primary care physicians do this quite frequently, where you see if you have any excess protein in the urine. That could be a sign. It could be a sign of hypertensive nephropathy, okay, high blood pressure related kidney disease or other kidney diseases as well. But yes, the short answer is not only can high blood pressure cause kidney disease, but in some cases, having the kidney disease can lead to high blood pressure.
All right. What about clogged arteries from trucking 56?
What? Okay. What about clogged arteries?
Yes.
We don't want them. We don't want them.
Can they cause high blood pressure?
Yeah, clogged arteries can cause high blood pressure. And so you want to make sure that you decrease your bad cholesterol, right? Like the LDL, the triglycerides. You want to keep those down at a normal level. One of the big ways that people get clogged arteries or high cholesterol is by eating excess amounts of animal fat from animals, okay? So if you're eating like a lot of red meat, especially a lot of marbled red meat, then that's something that could lead to high cholesterol. Cholesterol is something that is important that we have. You know, cholesterol helps us to make some of our cell membranes. We help to cholesterol to help us to make certain hormones, including testosterone. But all the testosterone we need, really, we make ourselves endogenously. So you don't need to run out and eat a lot of, you know, egg yolks and high cholesterol foods. But make sure you check out my video on how to unclog your arteries naturally, to find ways to avoid having clogged arteries and to also perhaps help your high blood pressure. Thank you for that question or that answer.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
All right. So shall we ask some questions, Dr. Frieda?
Okay, let's answer some questions. We got a few more minutes here, but and we will wrap up. All right.
This comes from David.
Hi, David.
Does high blood pressure cause chronic nasal congestions, causing difficulty in free nasal breathing?
Well, you know what? It can, because one thing that you'll notice, there are some people, if they get very high blood pressure, what can happen? They can get nosebleeds, all right? So we do have small vessels in the nose. So you can imagine if you're getting nosebleeds, if you have vessels that are really, really tight, then potentially it could cause an issue. But again, there are other things that can cause it too, such as having allergic rhinitis, seasonal allergies. So you want to make sure you consult with your physician, and possibly it's possible that you may need an ear, nose, throat consultation as well.
All right. Thank you, David. Chatting with Elise.
Hi there. Wait, chatting.
All this right. is a name we couldn't have trouble with. A-L-E-S, Aless,
Al. Oh, yes. Chatting with the least.
Hi, what about low blood pressure? What about low blood pressure in chronic kidney disease? Can it be correlated?
Okay, low blood pressure and chronic kidney disease. So it's going to be much less common, the low blood pressure and chronic kidney disease. We had that question earlier about blood pressure dropping during dialysis, right? That can certainly happen. But if you're someone who has chronic kidney disease and you have low blood pressure, you want to make sure of a few things. One, you want to review the blood pressure medications you're on and make sure that you're not on too many low blood pressure medicines. The other thing is, just like the same pathophysiology that can lead to kidney disease or disease in the blood vessels in the kidney, it can also lead to heart disease. And you want to make sure that you're not having congestive heart failure, okay, as a cause for low blood pressure. All right. But it certainly is something that's possible, having low blood pressure and kidney disease. You want to make sure you consult with your physician and you really want to find out what the cause is.
All right. Thanks. And Elise, have you music? Can omega-3s over time lower or reverse high blood pressure?
So omega-3s, that's one of those things. So the short answer is yes. Okay. The short answer is yes, because omega-3s, you know, have a lot of anti-inflammatory antioxidants, and you get omega-3s in certain foods. Ooh, a lot of fatty fish like salmon have omega-3s. And that is one of the ways to help to lower your blood pressure naturally. Remember though, when we're talking about these different ways of lowering blood pressure, there's no one magic bullet. Okay. So I'll talk about omega-3s. I'll talk about antioxidants. I'll talk about, you know, eating papaya, eating berries. I'll talk about beets, which have nitrates, which your body converts to nitric oxide, which dilates your blood vessels. I'll talk about, you know, meditation to lower your blood pressure, slow, deep breathing, exercise, and medications as well when necessary. So while yes, omega-3s over time can certainly help in lowering blood pressure, we have to remember that it's a big picture item. And so oftentimes it's multifaceted. So you want the omega-3s among other interventions for high blood pressure. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Ms. Margaret.
Hi, Ms. Margaret.
Can high blood pressure do anything to the liver?
It can. High blood pressure can affect every single place in your body with blood vessels. So the short answer is yes, just like it can affect you and give you blurry vision, just like it can cause nosebleeds, just like it can cause heart disease, just like high blood pressure can certainly cause kidney disease. High blood pressure can affect anywhere where you have tiny blood vessels. You certainly want to consult with your physician and start with asking about LFTs, liver function tests.
All right. Thank you, Margaret. All Michelle right. has a pretty good question. Dialysis, regarding dialysis, once on dialysis, is it a lifetime or can it be healed?
Oh, Ms. John. Okay. So here's the thing about dialysis. Most patients who progress in their CKD and end up on dialysis, most will be on dialysis long-term until they get a kidney transplant. Okay. However, there are certain situations where the dialysis is short-term, okay? If you're listening to me and you've been told for years that you've had CKD, not you specifically, Michonne, general you, anyone listening, if you've been told for years that you have CKD, CKD3, oh, now it's CKD4, now it's CKD5, you know, and you've been told that it's caused by high blood pressure or diabetes or focal segmental glomerular sclerosis or IgA nephropathy or lupus nephritis, whatever it is, if it's a chronic progressive disease, then oftentimes those patients who end up on dialysis, you know, perhaps it is irreversible if the kidney cells are sclerosed and scarred. But if you're someone, for example, who is on dialysis because you had septic shock, meaning your body had an overwhelming infection, which caused your kidneys to temporarily fail, perhaps by ATN, acute tubular necrosis, then there are many times when I've dialyzed patients until we get them over the septic shock and we get their blood pressure better, we get their infection out of their body, okay? Some patients will come in, and again, they might be on dialysis because perhaps they've had a poisoning. Oh, you know, they've had a poisoning. Perhaps they've had too much lithium. They've had an overdose of something, too much lithium in their body, or they've had something that's caused a temporary toxicity, and we might dialyze it out of their systems. Okay, in that case, you're not going to be on dialysis for life. So there are certain specific situations where the dialysis is temporary. I've had patients with something called rhabdomyolysis, which is, it can happen a lot in people who are lifting weights or doing really strenuous exercise to the point where they cause the muscle cells to tear, okay? And here's something interesting. The pigment in the muscle or the myoglobin, is actually toxic to the kidneys. So if you're exercising and working out, no pain, no gain, and you end up being in severe pain, you have dark urine, muscles that are swollen, then you could have rhabdomyolysis where you've ripped some of the muscle cells and it's caused a high pigment in the high pigment that's been toxic to the kidneys. Well, part of the treatment is dialysis, okay? And so I've had patients with rhabdomyolysis and I dialyze them temporarily. So the short answer, if it's one of the illnesses that is causing acute kidney injury or temporary kidney injury, then there is a such thing as a short-term temporary dialysis. But if you're talking about someone who has had chronic kidney disease that has progressed to the point where those kidney cells have sclerosed and they are pretty much scarred, then more likely than not, the dialysis is permanent until you get a kidney transplant.
All right. Good question.
All right. It's about time to wrap it on up, Shador. How many more we're going to get in here?
Just a few more.
All right.
This is from Janet. Does garlic and onions help lower high blood pressure?
Ooh, Janet. The answer is yes. And I want you to watch my video. Ooh, I just put this video out last month and it's on I had a couple videos last month, but one of them I talked about fruits that can help to lower your blood pressure. And I have other videos. If you look at like the truth about kidney detox, go to my playlist, look for videos on high blood pressure, look on videos on kidney disease. But yes, onions can help to lower blood pressure. Garlic can help. You don't want to cook them too much because you don't want to denature the blood pressure lowering agents. But garlic, for example, has a substance called allicin. Allicin helps to relax blood vessel walls. And when you relax those blood vessel walls, they dilate. When the blood vessel walls dilate, that decreases the pressure on them, hence lowering blood pressure. So yes, garlic and onions are excellent to have in the diet. You just don't want to overcook them. You just want to either eat them raw, we like it raw, or you want to just kind of saute them, okay? But yeah, garlic and onions can help to decrease blood pressure for sure.
All right, thank you, Dr. Frieda. So Melissa, these are some shout outs. Just thanking you. So this show is the highlight of my week. This is from Melissa Volsey.
Melissa, that's so nice. Thank you, I appreciate that. Oh, that's nice.
From Bong's Vibe. Dr. Freedom, thank you for coming here and educating us.
You're so welcome. It is absolutely my pleasure. You can probably pick up. I love, like when y'all ask me questions and we have this live interaction, that's what I love. And I get so many, y'all ask some smart questions too.
They really do.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Rosalyn, thank you for your learning knowledge.
You're so welcome. Thank you for supporting us.
From Ms. Kim Rosalyn. A. Great information, Dr. Frieda. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim A. You're welcome.
From Tyrone. Love this informative videos, Dr. Frieda.
Thank you, Tyrone.
And
oh, this is so nice. Oh, I like this.
Michonne, she's looking for her. Michonne's looking for her prize. I think you told she get a prize.
Extra I told point. You get the bonus point.
And this is my favorite comment of the night from David. Guilt Agard Reed. Your book is my new Bible.
Oh, that is so kind. Now, let me tell you something, though. Now, we ain't got but one Bible, but I definitely appreciate that because I will tell you the truth. All jokes aside, I am a prayerful person. Y'all know I'm not a perfect person. And I really am very thankful because in a lot of the information that I share, I love sharing it. I love knowledge. I love learning about high blood pressure and all of the illnesses, which you could probably tell, which is why I did internal medicine. I did pediatrics. I've done obesity medicine, you know, nephrology. I enjoy learning, and even more so than my enjoyment of learning, I enjoy sharing. And so I'm not ashamed to say that I am very grateful to God for that. So thank you so much. I appreciate you. And just find a few friends, please. Just go ahead and hit that share button now. Find a few friends in your social media and in your contacts and just share this. Even if they didn't catch this live, they can certainly catch the replay. And guess what else they can catch? They can catch Shador and me because we'll be back here on next Monday for another Medical Monday, Medicine in the News, where we talk about all of the hot health topics in the headlines. Thank y'all for watching. Thank you for your support. And thank you, Shador. for another wonderful week as co-host. All right.
All right.
We'll see y'all next week.
All right. Take care.
You've been listening to the Healthy Happy Life podcast with Dr. Frida. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. Also, if you enjoyed this show, don't forget to leave an awesome 5-star review on iTunes so we can continue to bring you great medical talks. This podcast is intended to be informational only. It is not a medical consultation, and this is not personalized medical advice. For medical advice, please consult your physician.